Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you know what time it is. Do you? Do you really? It's time for Browner and Burt. I'm John Browner. Burt Grossman clearly is not available today. I mean, normally you don't see him this soon anyway, but Burt Grossman had to take care of some business in Los Angeles, so he's unavailable on the show today. So it's just me, y'all. We riding solo, you and me. I got a lot on the show today. I want to talk about what's happening with Deshaun Watson. I might get to Aaron Rodgers as well. I want to talk about USA Hoops, and I want to talk about Karens versus Sharons. I'm also going to have our great friend Craig Elston on the show today to talk about the Padres trade. So this could be a very sports show. Won't be a lot of silliness on the show today. We're going to legit do an entertaining sports show. But for those of you who don't know, I'm John Browner, and you are listening on the Mightier 1090. You can find this show right here on YouTube at the Kaplan and Crew YouTube page. You can find me on Twitter at Browner's Podcast and on Instagram at Browner's Podcast as well. The show is now also available via the download. Shout out to the download people. Shout out to the finance department for making this happen. So all those things, the show's now available on all podcast platforms. So go ahead and dive into that. I know a lot of you guys have been asked for that. I'm glad we were finally able to bring that to you. You got to be careful, okay? Let's start the show with this. Progression sometimes can be disguised as failure. Progression can be described sometimes or mistaken as failure. When you are trying to accomplish something, when you're trying to progress, when you're trying to become better, oftentimes you do that through failure. Oftentimes you do that by failing to meet certain achievements or landmarks. Altered circumstance, that oftentimes is the progression. The failure is the path to success. And oftentimes, a lot of people don't understand that. A lot of times that gets swept under the rug or misunderstood by a lot of people. But I'm here to tell you what you're seeing with Team USA in the Olympics, men's basketball, is progression. Not for Team USA, but for the game of basketball. France being able to outplay the USA down the stretch is a sign of progression, not failure. In 1992, what the USA Dream Team did, and I put a blog about this up on Kaplan and Crew as well, the Brown Bag blog. You can Google it or you can go over to kaplanandcrew.com, scroll to the bottom and check it out. What happened in 1992 started a wave. It was the butterfly effect. By doing that in 1992, in 2021, we have seen international progression in the NBA at a level I don't think anyone anticipated. Look at what happened to end the NBA season this year. The breakout star was Luka Doncic. The MVP was Nikola Jokic. And the MVP and the finals MVP was Giannis Antetokounmpo. Those are three international players who didn't play a second of college basketball, have been playing pro ball over in the respective country in which they came from, and are now in the NBA, shining as some of the best and brightest players in the league. 1992 sparked that. The original Dream Team sparked that. That lit a fire across the basketball world that has now got you Luka Doncic. That got you Nikola Jokic. That got you Giannis. The population of the game around the world has made the NBA a better product to consume. It's made the game more well-rounded. And I know a lot of you guys want to talk about the USA losing. And okay, let's do that. Let's have that conversation. Let's dabble in that real quick. This thing was poorly constructed. This is not some accident at all. Zero, none, nada. You put Bam Adebayo on the team, an undersized guy who had a good year, not a good career so far. He had a good year. How'd he do this year? Okay, some may differ. Some people may disagree with me on that. Who's Cam Johnson? You don't know. Who's JaVale McGee? You don't know. Dame Lillard can't guard anybody. Zach LaVine can't guard anybody. I mean, I can go down the list of what's wrong with this team. Jason Tatum's great, but if you got Kevin Durant, what can Jason Tatum really do? Stand in the corner? He ain't setting picks. He ain't rolling hard to the basket. So you constructed this team in international play where these guys are superstars in their own right, on their own teams, but they are going to have trouble meshing their game together, one, and two, adjusting to the way that international basketball is played. And you're asking them to do this in a very short, in about a month of a window. These guys are accustomed to drawing fouls. These guys are accustomed to being able to show off the finesse style of NBA basketball. Not necessarily the 1990 grit and grind level of basketball that a lot of us grew up watching, but the way that the game is played now, they don't play that way. So to win in Olympic basketball, you need size. They don't have it. And you need consistent shooting. And they don't have it. They have great shooters on the team, and this is where I feel bad for Team USA, because they're going to get ridiculed, and they're going to get ran into the mud publicly. But people who don't really understand basketball, and I don't want to be a guy who goes, you don't understand, but what you're going to miss out on is the levels and the intricacy of international basketball that is vastly different than anything that we play here. So you're asking a guy like Dame Lillard, an undersized guy who doesn't guard, doesn't pass, to now go on an international stage and run an offense when that's not his game. You're asking Drew Holiday, who just got through shooting, I don't know, 3-for-17, to transition from the NBA Finals to the Olympic team and run an offense when that's not what he does on his team. The team was poorly constructed. We don't live in the age now. And I'm lucky. I'm happy about this. We don't live in an age now where you could just throw a bunch of guys together and then come back with a gold medal. I don't want that. The international game has progressed. The style has progressed. The players are not intimidated. The NBA players, who you're used to seeing dominate Rudy Gobert and Evan Fournier, these guys take a different level of pride when they put their country's uniform on. That's not my opinion. Look at the games. Have you ever seen Evan Fournier do that to your team when he played for Orlando? Did you see him do any of that when he played for the Celtics? No. But when he puts that uniform on to play for the country of France, their offense is more catered to what he can do. So he looks better because he is a decent player. And when you round your offense around a bunch of guys who've been playing together for years, and we just throw a bunch of guys together because they're good, a decent team with a defensive player like Rudy Gobert on it and a guy who can make baskets like Evan Fournier, who's played in international basketball before, they're going to have more initial success than Team USA. Now, do I believe Team USA will win? I don't know. I think they can. They obviously have more talent than anybody else. But international game is not about talent. You need it, but you don't have it to survive. Case in point, the Team USA has lost 3 games in a month. When was the last time you could say that? So I believe that we're looking at progression. We're looking at progress. We're not looking at failure, because the winner in this is the NBA. The NBA has all these players playing in their league that are representing themselves on a national stage. This is a sign that the NBA has grown to a level that it's a global game, and we don't only rely on American imports to be great at this game, to bring you a great television product. We don't only rely on guys who are playing in America. We bring in guys from around the world. So I'm happy for this progression. I don't see it as failure, and I hope you don't either, and I hope this explanation kind of broke it down for you. So, but I love 3-on-3 basketball. Have you guys seen 3-on-3 basketball? 3-on-3 basketball in the Olympics is fantastic. You should check it out if you get a chance to watch it. It's really, really worth the watch. It's entertaining. It's fast. It's physical. It's fun. And they're literal ringers on other countries' teams. There's a guy named something Nash who plays for Poland. He's black as me. He speaks no Polish. But he's wearing a Polish uniform with Poland citizenship, balling for 3-on-3 in the Olympics for Poland. So shout out to him. Get it where you can, brother. Big time. But so if you get a chance to watch that, check it out. It's really entertaining. And the USA women's team is great as well. They got Dolson on the team. They got Casey Plum. They got a lot of good American females who did not make Team USA doing their thing in the women's 3-on-3. So check that out as well. Go America. I knew we would get to this point. So look, I got paper. I'm writing things down now. I knew we would get to this point with two people. I knew we would find ourselves at the doorstep of a trade eventually happening for Deshaun Watson and, unfortunately, Aaron Rodgers returning to Green Bay. Sports are very predictable in that way. We are looking at Aaron Rodgers now tucking his tail and going back to Green Bay to play quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. We're also right now hearing the Houston Texans front office openly say they're willing to listen to offers for Deshaun Watson. This is the same stupid Houston Texans front office who knew he requested a trade. Then, when the draft was here, when free agency came by, they could have got picks for him, years of picks for him. They could have got players for him to help that new head coach and to help that team, to give that fan base something to cheer for that wanted to play for the Houston Texans. Just because Deshaun Watson doesn't want to do it doesn't mean there aren't 1,000 football players ready to strap on the helmet and do it for the city of Houston. And that front office put that head coach, the oldest head coach, the oldest first-time head coach in the league, behind an eight ball. He's doomed. And the Houston Texans front office did that to him. And now they made themselves look really, really stupid by coming out and saying they're willing to trade Deshaun Watson now. What's changed? Because I would argue nothing, because now he's going to show up at camp. He's going to take their money. He's not going to play. Because the second anything happens, if I'm him, the first thing I'm going to do is grab my back or grab my hamstring or grab my calf. So you can't find me. I'm here. I showed up on time. I did all the workouts. I went to all the meetings. I'm encouraging my team. I'm hurt. I can't play. So now you're just going to be writing this guy checks to hold a clipboard. And I'm talking about $30 million checks. Because I think he's the third highest paid player in the league, fourth or fifth, third amongst quarterbacks, but I think fourth or fifth in the league. So then, like... this idea that now they're open to trading him really makes them look as dumb as Aaron Rodgers, who we've waited all offseason for this to shake out. First, he was going to host Jeopardy. Then he was getting traded to the Denver Broncos. Then he might be traded to the Oakland Raiders. Then he might retire, which that lasted for maybe 20 minutes. So I don't even think that was accurate. But we're looking at Aaron Rodgers now as a guy who lost the fight. He stood up to the organization. He screamed, he yelled, he cried, he sent mixed messages, he wore funny t-shirts in interviews, he was elusive during interviews on the match in a golf cart riding, playing with Tom Brady. They shot shots at him in jokes, back and forth, Phil Mickelson, Bryce DeChambeau, or whatever that guy's name is. And here we are, on our way back to Green Bay. Stupidity, 100% stupidity. That's what we're looking at when we're talking about Aaron Rodgers now. This could have been handled very quietly.
This didn't have to be this public. This didn't have to get this ugly. You played your hand and you lost. You were two plays from the Super Bowl. You're the reigning MVP, most likely the repeat MVP. You've got a great team. And you're trying to get out because you don't like the general manager who's never hiked a football in your career. People can't even tell you who the general manager is for the Green Bay Packers, let alone the president or the owner, because then they would know that they don't have one. It's a strange situation in Green Bay. You're the face of it. You're in control of it. And this is what you chose to do. And now you got to tuck your tail and walk back. The Texans now have to wipe egg off their face and accept trade offers. Because you knew the guy wasn't going to play because he told you he wasn't going to play. He's going to show up because he can't afford to lose the money. He can't afford to lose the money. So he's going to show up. He can't afford a $50,000 a day fine. By the way, neither can Aaron Rodgers. Because if you're going to play, you might as well show up. If you're Aaron Rodgers and you're done kicking and screaming, you're done throwing a tantrum in the offseason, you're done taking pictures on vacation with your wife, congratulations. You even had her out here saying, oh, he's dedicated to football. The Green Bay Packers front office disrespected him. I now have to follow her on Twitter to hear about you. So here we are. They've disrespected you how? You work for them. And if you played this properly, you could have had the fans on your side. You could have had the locker room on your side. You would have had the coaches on your side. And you would have had this guy on the outs. But you chose to do a power play. You chose to follow in the Texans' footsteps and do a power play. And now you both look stupid in different ways, but dumb nonetheless. We all know how great Deshaun Watson is. We all know how great Aaron Rodgers is. And both of these guys really put their organizations in impossible situations. And both organization and player look bad. Deshaun Watson looks bad for personal choices that he made off the field that came to light. And Aaron Rodgers looks bad for being unprofessional at a time and in a sport where they will move on without you because he got to where he got because Green Bay moved on without Brett Favre. So when you are looking at this, on its face, it's business. Get what you can get for a guy who doesn't want to participate for you anymore. Or, in Green Bay's case, force a guy to play. Now, I know a lot of you are probably saying, well, that's what Houston tried to do. Houston wanted to force him to play. He wasn't going to. Period. He's got legal troubles. There's a lot of reasons why Deshaun Watson may not play. But there was only going to be one reason why Aaron Rodgers wasn't going to play. And we all knew he was going to play. We all knew the 20-second report about him retiring was false. The rumors about him playing for Denver, that might have been true. The idea that he was going to play for San Francisco if they did not trade for Trey Lance, that fizzled out. And also another thing Aaron Rodgers may want to add into the stew of thinking he was going to get traded was this. What you're going to command in a trade, teams may not be willing to give that up. Because they may be asking for draft picks long after you're gone, man. We're talking about multiple number ones, quite possibly a number two, maybe some threes as well. That's a lot. If you're the Broncos, I mean, let's wait till he gets free. If I'm the Broncos, okay, well, we'll give you 2 ones for Deshaun Watson. He got legal trouble. We don't know when he's going to play, and that'll give us a chance to see if Drew Lock can raise his trade value. If I'm John Elway, who's been dumb on quarterback since the day he got there, with the exception of Peyton Manning falling into his lap, you got to use the market against itself. You got to call the Texans and say, hey, man, I got some on the table for Aaron Rodgers. But we'll take Deshaun Watson for this. And you call Green Bay and you go, hey, man, look, I know you don't want to play there. I'll give you this. We also got Deshaun Watson in the back burner. So if you guys don't want to play ball, we'll go back to Green Bay. We'll go back to Houston. Play them against each other. Figure it out. Do something. Because you're running out of time. Speaking of out of time, when we come back, we'll talk to Craig Elson about the latest Padre trade. We'll get into what we think the Padres can and can't do down the stretch. And we got a bunch of other more stuff. Brown and Burt minus Burt. We'll be right back. The Mightier 1090.
Of course.
Ladies and gentlemen, second half of the pod, Browner and Burt on the Mightier 1090. You will probably have noticed if you listen to the first half of this show, Burt's not here. I lied and said Burt was doing something. He was taking care of some business. Burt's lazy, okay? Burt decided he was in Los Angeles and didn't want to do the show from his phone because he's an effer. And so you'll see him tomorrow, and you can curse him out when he's on the show because I cursed him out when he said he couldn't do the show. So that's the type of relationship we have. I found someone who can do something Burt cannot do, talk baseball, okay? So we're joined on the Mightier 1090, courtesy of the San Diego Strike Force, the team Burt actually coaches, by our friend Craig Elston. What's up, Craig?
Oh, John, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend, and it's always a pleasure not to talk to Burt. So, you know, to me, I'm getting the best of both worlds.
I unfortunately have that prestige distinction twice a week. So look, we're gonna do a little Karen's versus Sharon's at some point toward the end of the show. But I wanted to have you on because if I ever have like any real Padres issues or questions, I'm gonna call you.
Yes.
And normally, so far up the season, I haven't. This is the first time I've been like, "What the hell are they doing?" Craig, tell people first and foremost where to find you, and why I'm calling you.
Fair enough. So for those who didn't listen to us back when 1090 was on a different iteration or a different management, let's put it that way. You can find me on Twitter at 619 Sports. And you can find the Padres Hot Tub podcast on Twitter at Padres Hot Tub. John Gennaro and myself have been hosting the Padres Hot Tub podcast for going on six seasons now. And we're out about twice a week, four to five times a week for our patrons. With all the latest information, including, we're in Preller season now. It's officially Preller season the next 5 days.
I trust Preller probably more than I've trusted any GM of any team I've ever closely paid attention to. This trade doesn't make sense to me. I don't like it. I don't like it for multiple reasons, and maybe you can either talk me off a cliff or help me jump. This guy got good this year. So he's basically been good for half a season. Before this year, he was roughly between a 230 hitter some seasons, a 280 hitter, 260, 270. He's leading the league in hits this year. When someone tells me, oh, he's an all-star in baseball, that means absolutely nothing to me. And I mean nothing. If you told me a guy was a pro bowler, that has more weight to me than a guy being an MLB all-star because the way that they structured all-stars. So I don't like this. I was waiting for the Chris Bryant shoe to drop, which still may. The Max Scherzer shoe to drop, which still may. Or we may not get any of that. Please help me.
So the very first thing I would suggest is patience because this is the first trade that AJ Preller has made. And in his history with the Padres, he's like somebody opening a box of Pringles, you know, or can of Pringles. He doesn't stop with one. You know, he keeps going. So there's a possibility that there is a player that is going to be traded off the current Padres roster.
Eric Hosmer.
Like Eric Hosmer, Will Myers, two guys who have, you know, serious salaries attached to them to really mediocre performance that maybe makes this make a lot more sense. I mean, as it is right now, Adam Frazier is, to me, Jake Cronenworth. I think Cronenworth is actually a little bit better player overall than Adam Frazier. But if you look at their career slash lines, overall, they're within a couple points of each other across the board. They're both considered gold glove caliber second basemen. They both hit for a pretty good average, get on base pretty well, don't strike out, and have a little bit of pop. Cronenworth with a little bit more than Frazier. So when I first saw this trade, I was kind of in your boat, John. I mean, first off, I evaluate every trade in terms of what did you give up?
Right.
Giving up Tuukka Pietarmarkkanen and a couple of, a double A and a low A reliever, a double A outfielder, that's a fine price. That's not a problem. I don't mind giving up that price for Adam Frazier. The real question is, how are you going to use Adam Frazier? Because Adam Frazier replacing Jake Cronenworth does not improve this team at all. Adam Frazier replacing Will Myers, but now he's playing right field instead of his gold glove position or gold glove about position second base. That's a little dicey as well. There's no reason to replace Tommy Pham. He's been playing great at the plate and in left field. So to me, this only makes sense if, like I tweeted yesterday at 619 Sports, you put Frazier at second, Cronenworth at first, and Hosmer at left out. And maybe that's the direction they're going. But honestly, the way that Preller's talking about it, he's like, you can't have enough good bats. This guy's a winner. He fits. He checks boxes, et cetera, et cetera. I get that, but it's weird. It's a weird priority, and it certainly wouldn't have been my first priority. That's what makes me come back to maybe there are two or three more trades coming that will explain this.
When you tell me this guy's a winner, that's a lie. That guy's a loser. He's been on the Pirates, who've won nothing since he's been in the league, which he said so himself. I was a winner my entire career until I got to the major leagues.
Right.
So I calling this guy a winner after he called himself a loser doesn't necessarily help the argument of moving Cronenworth in favor of this guy. Like, if we were trading for this guy to start the season, the question would have been, why?
Right.
The prospects, quote unquote, these prospects aren't worth this guy to start the season. Because a lot of times that's how I look at trades, especially in baseball. What was this guy doing to start the season? If we traded for this guy in the offseason, would there be this much joy, jubilation, or would there be some pullback going, well, wait a minute, why did we give up these kids for this guy?
Right.
So I'm trusting AJ because I hope that there are more deals involved in this. Because if you go past this trading deadline and you don't trade Mackenzie Gore for one of these names that I recognize, real all-stars like Chris Bryant, World Series player, like Matt Scherzer, a World Series player, I'm going to really start to question what the F is going on with one Mackenzie Gore and this pitching staff. Because they've got to get something to address the pitching. And again, this guy showing up, one means Eric Hosmer is out of there. I don't give a damn what anybody else tells you. Two, there's got to be more.
Yeah.
There's got to be more.
No, there has to be. And on Padres Hot Tub, when we broke down, we've probably done two or three trade deadline, podcasts already. Last night I was making the point that doing that for the Padres is one of the most useless things you can ever do because he never does what you think he's going to do.
Right. Who saw this coming?
Right. So you might as well just – exactly. You could have given me – fill out a sheet 25 to 50 players long with who the Padres would target, and I never would have put Adam Frazier on that list simply because he does what Cronenworth does at Cronenworth's position, and Cronenworth is great. So, again, it doesn't make sense on the top. And as John Gennaro and I broke it down last night, to me, this is a trade that on its own could swing either way. Like it could actually hurt the Padres to trade for Adam Frazier because all of a sudden, if he starts eating into the wrong guys at bats, and furthermore, if he comes over, and I think you make a valid point in terms of don't trust the 300 at bats or 400 at bats that he's had this year. Look at his body of work. Now, he wasn't good in the mini season in 2020, but I throw everything from the mini season out.
I agree.
Eric Hosmer was
including the Dodgers World Series.
Absolutely, yeah. All aspects of it were shambolic, and especially for baseball, 60 games means nothing. There was always a 60-game stretch in every season that you could twist and turn to make it anything you want it to be. So I don't worry about that. The two seasons before that, Adam Frazier was a 280 hitter, basically both years with very little power, 10 home runs, and that's what I expect him to be. Like, that's what I think he really is. He's probably a 280 hitter with a little bit of pop. He's hitting 327 right now, if he finishes the year at 280, that means he'll come over to the Padres and hit poorly. You know, and the version of that hurts the team, right? But the version that really helps the team is if they are really doing what you said and what the tea leaves are being laid out to appear to be, which is that you're getting away from Eric Hosmer. Now, some of the folks on the Mightier 1090 audience might go, why would you do that? Eric Hosmer is one of the faces of the franchise. He must be one of the best players. He's one of the highest paid. The thing is, the Padres spent a bunch of money for a player that 4 years into his contract has essentially delivered nothing from the advanced metrics. I don't want to get deep into the advanced metrics, but I think you know the term war. He's a zero war player over 4 years, zero war. That means you could get anybody from AAA, put them in at his spot, and expect a similar level to what Eric Hosmer's provided for $21 million a year. So if the Padres, in the middle of a pennant race, are willing to look at one of their quote-unquote veteran leaders and say, listen, you know what you are? You're a sunk cost, man. We get economics 101. You're a sunk cost. We can't cut your salary. We have to pay you no matter what, but we don't have to play you.
Right.
And perhaps today, in a conference room like I'm sitting in now, but at Petco Park, perhaps A.J. Preller, Peter Seidler, Jace Tingler are on one side of the conference room, Eric Hosmer's on the other, and they're saying, listen, Eric, we just traded for the all-star second baseman. He's going to play. Jake Cronenworth is an all-star. He's going to play. That means you're not going to play. And here's the thing. We have found Team X, Team Y, Team Z that might be interested in having you be their full-time first baseman for the next 4 years. What do you think about accepting a trade instead of sticking it out and being a bench player here? You'll either ride the bench for us and start twice a week, or you can go be a full-time starter in New York, Kansas City, you know, name the place. That might be what's happening behind the scenes. We don't know. We're not in that room, but I suspect that that's the direction they're going. That's the way I really hope they're going, because that's the way that makes sense for the Padres to get better on the field as the result of this trade. Now, you brought up the pitching, my friend. They 100% must and will go get some pitching. I think there's
let me present another, but on that front, I'm glad you dropped all that Hosmer knowledge, because I hope that's what they're doing too. That would be good front office action. What I hope they're also doing when they were done having that conversation is AJ Preller and the owner didn't put Tingler on the other side of that table and go, listen, this is what we want you to do. Weathers has to pitch six innings. I don't care what the score is. Unless he's hurt, he goes six innings. I don't care how many pitches it takes, because we need him to show we can count on him before it's all said and done. Because I watched him in Miami hit a home run, give up a run, and pretty much pitch four solid frontline starter innings and then be removed from the game and us lose it.
Yeah.
And it's not the first time I've seen this. So you're tuned in to this team. Why won't they let him, one, consistently find a place in the starting rotation, and two, let him pitch six innings?
Okay, there are answers to both of those questions.
Thank you.
The first, to just specifically the Miami start, Weathers was coming off of a heel injury, which had laid him up for 2.5 weeks or thereabouts. And as such, I don't think they felt he was built up enough to get to the fifth. I thought he was going to come out and pitch the fifth. He threw great in the third and fourth innings.
Right.
I was a little bit surprised by that. There's another aspect of this, and then a third. The second aspect is Ryan Weathers' like career innings total. He's at the point of doubling it this year. He only threw a handful of innings last year. The year before that, he was hurt. The year before that, he threw like 100 innings. So the Padres had a game plan coming into this year to not let Ryan Weathers throw more than about 100 innings for the entire year. Okay, so with that, he's been pulled in and out of the starting rotation. They sent him down to AAA for a little while. You know, he's had this stint on the DL that wasn't like fake. He got hurt, but so the Padres are intending to limit Ryan Weathers' innings. That's part of their game plan. Here's the third part of this. The Padres are also showcasing Ryan Weathers. San Diego has a number of prospects, 4 to 5 prospects they really don't want to trade, that they think are going to be a part of this team's long-term future. Ryan Weathers is a guy I think they have been dangling in some of these trades, looking for a great starter with more reliability and more innings, a Jose Berrios, for example, from the Twins. And if you can get that, you might trade Ryan Weathers, because the number one thing is, John, they're afraid that this kid is going to break down and not be available to you in September or October when the team is in the playoffs. So instead of building him up, they're trying to kind of maintain him. It's a tough spot. They don't think of him as a playoff rotation piece. They think of him as a bullpen piece in the playoffs and quite possibly trade bait to get us the starter that you want to pitch in the playoffs.
I am known for saying really far off things that I honestly believe in.
Okay.
I'm gonna slap you with another one. If you trade him for a innings eater, like I keep hearing this cat's name out of Minnesota. If you trade Ryan Weathers for that, this will be a Tatis level from the White Sox for James Shields level trade.
Nah. Jose Berrios is a good pitcher. He's not an innings eater. He's a good.
So was James Shields. He wasn't bad.
Yeah, but that was like 5 years later in his career. Jose Berrios is like 28, 29 years old. He's got electric stuff. He's a really good pitcher. It could backfire. There's no question it could backfire.
Okay, let me ask you a question, okay? Who's a better pitcher today between those two guys?
Berrios.
Who's a better pitcher?
No question. Berrios, no question.
Because he can pitch more innings or because he has better stuff?
Yes and yes. He has better stuff. He's a much better strikeout pitcher. He has one of the most dynamite breaking balls in the league. And he's a guy who regularly goes 6-7 innings for the Twins. So instead of that 4-5 inning guy, you get a 6-7 inning guy. That really changes the profile because, you know, I thought of three priorities for the Padres at the deadline. Okay. And Adam Frazier was not one of them. One was a starting pitcher who can pitch 5 to 6 to 7 innings. One was bullpen help, because the bullpen has been used so hard in the first couple games of the season that we're seeing guys wear down. We're seeing performance deteriorate from Melanson to Pagan to Adams to Hill. Like, all these guys have dropped off a little bit. So I thought, add an arm to the bullpen, add an arm to the rotation, add an outfielder to the team, because the outfield depth is poor beyond the starting three. Those were the things I thought that Padres needed to do. I still think they need to do all those things. Adam Frazier can be an outfielder, so there's a little bit of a box check there. But for the most part, I feel like they're far from done, my friend. They've got to go get these items. And in order to get those things and not trade C.J. Abrams, who is expected to be a star in this league, okay? You mentioned Mackenzie Gore earlier. There is no worse possible time in his career to date to trade Mackenzie Gore than today. It would be a disaster.
He has no value.
Exactly. He has no value right now. So you would be offering him as a broken toy to another team. Like, hey, can you fix this? Do you want to try and fix this thing? My son broke it and it doesn't work anymore. You know, that's impossible. You just can't do that. You have to hang on to him because he's a distressed asset right now. Like, you just have to hang on to him and hope he gets better. So you're not going to trade Abrams. You can't trade Gore. You really can't trade Luis Camposano, a kid with an actual hit tool at catcher, when the catcher you've got has a bad knee. You just can't trade Luis Camposano and rely on Austin Nola and his wooden knee to be your catcher. And Robert Hassel, the kid out of AAA or single A, like, maybe you trade him. He's right now the number 30 prospect in all of baseball. So the Padres want to not trade these guys. They want to build the team and keep all those guys. I don't think you can thread that needle without trading Ryan Weathers.
I am probably the worst person to ask a question about Mackenzie Gore, because I have zero faith in him. I think he has no trade value, but they have to trade him because he's the only quote unquote shiny toy that you could trick someone with that's never done anything for you. he's always a top 10 in all these minor league farm system rankings. He's always in the top 10. He's always highly spoken about, but they say he's kind of in the forest with some of the things that are going on with him mechanic wise, throwing strikes, getting outs, things of that nature. But for me, I like Weathers because I've seen him perform.
Right.
I like Weathers because I've seen his ERA be successful. I've seen his strikeouts and I've seen his walks. I don't know that about Mackenzie Gore.
Right.
I'm so in the dark about him. Just let him pitch. We got about a minute left. Let him pitch. Let him pitch. Let's find out. But what also I want to see us talk about is this young lady right here. Hey, for those of you listening on 1090, we're watching a white woman, quite possibly in her early 50s, at Rolling Loud in Miami, just going extra hard. Like, she knows every single word to these songs. I can't tell you how happy that makes me. Ladies and gentlemen, we need more Karen. We need less Karens and more Sharons.
Yes.
That's a Sharon, okay? We need more Sharons on our side and less Karens. What do you think of this lady?
I think she's wonderful. I think she has never berated anyone at Trader Joe's for wearing a mask. I think she got both vaxes and is having that hot vax summer that that we've all been enjoying for the most part, everyone who made the choice. So I am loving our Sharon here, and she is someone I would absolutely – I assume that she understands puff, puff, pass. She would never Bogart, you know. I mean, I think this woman understands everything from front to back.
So she might be the John Stockton of puff, puff, passes, man. Till next time on Brown and Bird. Thanks, Craig.
You bet.
Peace.